Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm the producer, Caleb Keith, and I'm joined by our hosts, Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, and Adam Francisco. Follow these great minds as they answer pressing questions about theology, history, and apologetics. This show is brought to you by 1517 The Legacy Project, serving to proclaim the gospel to all people, especially those broken by the church.
One. Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm Caleb, and I'm joined by Drs. Keith and Drs. Francisco, along with Pastor Joel Hess today, to do a special episode on the role or the job of the pastor. Pastor Hess is a close friend of the Thinking Fellows and 1517 generally. He's a writer for the Jagged Word.
And he's written on 1517 Legacy.
And yes, yeah, he has joined the 1517 crew as well over for the blog there. So, yeah, it should be a great episode. We have some questions for him about what the role of the pastor is, what day-to-day life for a pastor looks like. So why don't we jump right in? Dr. Keith, you had some maybe an introduction of Pastor Hess. You were just recently out at his church.
Yeah, my introduction of Pastor Hess is he's a pastor. He's part of the Jagged Word. He and I met. We've been writing for the Jagged Word for about the same amount of time, about 3 years now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we met 2 years ago when the Jagged Word did its first sort of, what did we call that thing?
Get together at
St. Louis Symposia, which we've done every year since.
3 years.
3 years. That's actually a lot, I think. We're planning on doing that again this year. We go out there. We do actually a little kind of once a year podcast from our favorite pub there. We host a party for the fourth year seminarians. It's kind of cool.
It's cool. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's good. So, but today, Pastor Hess was staying with us, and so I thought, man, we should do a podcast. Dr. Rosenblatt can't make it today. He's out helping his son. But it's nice to have Pastor Hess here. And what we want to discuss is just the job of the pastor. Without Rod here, the only pastor in the room is Joel. So the rest of us, I think, will probably just throw questions your way.
Should start with a confession and absolution, maybe. You know, I can do that for you. So
could we do that for each other, though? Right.
Luther would say, yeah.
Okay. But, okay, that's good. Well, that was your litmus test. You made it. Okay. All right, so I just want to start out quickly with Joel. What is the job of what is it? When we say the job of the pastor, what are we talking about? What is a pastor? What is the role of a pastor? What is the job of a pastor? I mean, you can go biblically, you can go confessionally, you can just go from your experiences. Let us know. What's the job of the pastor?
Knee-jerk answer, as you always hear, is word and sacrament, which we vowed that we weren't going to talk about. But it is, you know, preaching the word, giving out the Holy Communion, and baptizing people and absolving people of their sins. And that is primary. Christ calls us to make disciples, how, baptize, teach, and the pastor does that. Then we use the word pastor, shepherd, you know, and that's not just word and sacrament, although it's ran by that. That's the engine. That's how you lead. But we are called to shepherd the people, through our words, through our leadership, even when it comes to building projects, quite frankly, as far as how to be the church in the area you're at, how to grow that church. It's not as simple as saying we do word and sacrament. You know, there's different ways you do word and sacrament where you're at with the people. So it's a leadership job, whether people like to admit that or not. In fact, the worst kind of people are the people that don't admit that, but they actually end up leading.
That's interesting. Yeah, because you hear that debate a lot, especially among Lutheran pastors, that a pastor is not supposed to be the CEO of the church.
Right.
In fact, on Jagged Word, not too long ago, one of the authors, Ross Engel, put up an article that he expressly said that, but sort of suggested it.
Yeah.
And he got quite a bit of blowback from some of the pastors in our church in our synod, that are pastors of larger congregations and who probably do have administrative roles to a large degree.
Right.
And they were giving him some blowback about that, saying, you know, it is required that you take care of sort of the functions of your church, too. What do you think about that?
You are leading it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they were wrong because they weren't really listening to Ross, who was simply saying, don't measure the quality of you being a pastor by simply how many butts are in the pews. And I think they overreacted to that. But then there's the other side that kind of says, well, we're not CEOs. We don't lead at all. We're just up there preaching and doing word sacrament. And I think you are, I'll get killed for this, but you actually are, not in the business form totally, but you are a CEO, and you're lying to yourself, you're not. Whether you like it or not.
We need to make a meme of that, Caleb.
You really should, because whether you like it or not, you are leading the people, whether they know it or not. Whether you have a guy who's the chairman and he's supposed to be the leader, he's not ever going to be. You're in the stinking pulpit. They're looking at you. You're the man God sent to lead. That's how they acknowledge it, and you will never change that. And so embrace that. Be responsible with that, and go forward.
So, personal question here, maybe. Why did you get into it? Because you weren't, your undergrad was, you were a lit major?
Yeah.
At a state school. Yeah. It's not the typical path of most guys who go from undergrad right into seminary, but you did. So what?
I had a degree that they invented for the women who didn't go to war in the early 1900s. English. Anyhow, I didn't know that at the time. But
is that true?
It is true.
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah. That's, I think it was invented in England.
Do you love that?
I need a link.
I know.
To some
article. Evidence?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the Thinking Fellows. We don't need evidence. It's not the Research Fellows, the Thinking Fellows.
They're all doctors. They are the Research Fellow.
Good enough. They are a library unto themselves.
gosh.
Anyhow. No, that would be good. Anyhow, so yeah, English literature. I wanted to go on. I was in the middle of applying to Michigan State to be a PhD in philosophy. I wanted to know truth, and I wanted to learn the original languages, and I discovered you can't find the original languages taught in most schools, let alone state schools, and their classic departments was like, well, it's like this, actually, four people or something, and quite frankly, I saw cheaper education at seminary where I could learn Greek and Hebrew. So I didn't go there to be a pastor. I went there to get
Most people wouldn't say cheaper education.
Not anymore.
We're talking about Lutheran seminaries.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah, now it's a little crazy.
So you probably went at the time when they had figured out to make the tuition all but free, right?
You had, every year was different. One year it was free. The other way, I had some scholarships. I did very well. And so one year I got, I think, most of it paid for because of that. Had a high grade point or whatever. But I did really, I actually went to seminary because the way they taught was a way that's not being taught anymore in our schools. In other words, like learning Greek, sit down, memorize your stuff, get your work done, which is not the case in your school systems anymore. When it comes to languages, you just sort of sit around and you talk and get feely with it and whatever. So I really admired, quite frankly, the way education went out at the seminary. It was old school at the time. I can't say that is the case. Maybe it is. So I went there for education. What's beautiful is my pastor, you have to work for a pastor when you go to school there. He immediately, and it's not the same case everywhere, but he immediately had me making hospital visits and talking to people. And I really didn't like people when I went to seminary.
But you still don't really, do you?
And I still really don't.
Yeah.
I love Jesus, so. And Jesus likes people, so it seems to work out.
I've heard you argue that Jesus doesn't like people.
You can hear me actually argue like two sides within about an hour. But that really kind of, I'm at people dying. I'm like touching the untouchable. You know what I mean? It was really like the opposite of what anybody thought Joel Hess would do. And it kind of like kicked my butt. And next thing in a Flannery O'Connor way, I'm a pastor. So that's the boring journey.
So what do you mean by that? In the Flannery O'Connor way?
Like here I am, just sort of God's force, the sort of forceful grace is another topic, but you just end up where you're at, and God does things through you regardless of your talent or your desire, your passion. That's why I don't like it when people are like, you need to have a passion for the people. I don't know if that's the case. I didn't have a passion for the people, but I think my parishioners would say I do.
So, I think so.
Yeah.
Do you have anything, Adam, you want to throw this away? You've been kind of quiet this morning. You just got done working out, so you're a little...
You're on that
post-workout slump.
Recovery!
Do we need to get you some protein?
Tell us about... you mentioned the languages at seminary. What else is involved in a seminary education in terms of the curriculum?
Yeah, good. At the time, and it has changed, I think the basis hasn't, but your languages, and I think they do a hardcore job of that. And I didn't go in there from a, like Caleb's a Concordia school, you know, learning them there. So I just knew German and English. So your languages are huge. And learn, and then from there on, you study the Bible in the original language, which is hilarious. In Norman Nagel's class, there was a lady that was, I'm going to get killed for this too, but was getting an M.A., and he kind of almost made fun of, not her as a female, but she didn't know, you don't have the languages. And so he's like, you can't be a theologian and not know the languages. Anyhow, so you learn the languages, study the Bible in the original languages. You study the confessions, not in the original language, which is interesting, I think. You're not, you can take German, Latin, but...
you probably don't have time to require.
You don't have time, which is weird. Because
it's already a four-year degree.
Time. Yeah.
They had Latin available there, though?
They have Latin, German available. That's the biggest part of it. Then you learn how to preach. I should say, back up from that, you learn to the hermeneutic stuff. You know, I don't think they even use that language anymore.
Yeah, they do hermeneutics.
They don't use eisegetics. They don't like to use that one anymore, but which is all silly. But, you know, how to understand the text, translate it, you know, and, you know, rhetoric. It'd be cool if they did it a classical sort of deal, grammar, logic, rhetoric sort of format. But anyhow, and then practical stuff, you know. So one class of pastoral counseling. Now, the joke is, you know, that's all you're doing when you're a pastor is, like, pastoral counseling. But and the only thing you learn in pastoral counseling is you're not a counselor, so don't do counseling. Which is actually not bad, you know.
Yeah, refer, right.
In other words, yeah, if someone clearly has an issue beyond sin and confession absolution, you know, let them see a professional. But I have prescribed pills. I'm joking. I have not, so.
You suggest that the curriculum has changed. Maybe not the foundation,
right.
But I mean, what does that mean?
I think it should always be, how can we make ourselves better? I think that's the only way that's occurred. I don't think in major ways. I think more in the sense of a focus. I think when I was there, it was more random, which is sad. Like, so you can leave seminary. When I was there, you could leave seminary and never have a class on the office of the ministry, which is weird. Because that's what you're doing. So you never actually do a theological, like, why am I a pastor? What is it? Why are they not pastors sort of deal?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more random, perhaps, and now it's becoming more focused, which is good and bad. Watch out for people that try to focus things and streamline things, but that's life. So, yeah, but I can't say I'm real familiar with exactly what they're doing right now. Yeah.
You went to St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. You said you were going to get killed for referencing Nagel telling somebody that they can't be a theologian without the languages. That's from our earliest core. Melanchthon writes that time and time again, that it's impossible to be a student of the Holy
Absolutely.
Scriptures without knowing the right. text in its original language.
Or to call you, I would say this, everyone's a theologian, so of course you can be a theologian, but you can't call yourself a master. That kind of language is kind of a weird thing to say when you don't even know the Greek or Hebrew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe sensei.
Sensei.
Scott, did we have Greek or Hebrew together at Concordia?
No. I took Greek at Concordia, and I took Hebrew during an MA program. Mm. So I took Latin mostly at Concordia, though.
Were you both pre-sem at Concordia?
I was.
And they threw you out?
I think I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember.
That's a whole other topic. Like,
well, that's kind of funny. Two pre-seminary students who didn't become pastors.
I went to seminary for a quarter.
Wow, that's a good
and
story.
And I taught at a seminary for 3 years.
So. All right, so you went to seminary for a quarter. What happened, Adam?
That's a good question.
I just got accepted to a PhD program.
Okay.
So I did that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, when I told my wife I was going to withdraw, she said, thank God, because you'd be a terrible pastor. Because I don't like people.
Yeah. See, everybody told me
I like
about
people.
Me.
I like people.
Right.
But I don't like people.
You don't like helping people.
No. Oh, I do like helping people a lot, actually. But
it's the hobnobbing.
My advice to a lot of things is just suck it up.
Right.
You know?
Right. Absolutely.
Just move on.
That's a whole other topic. But
sally forth.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
Forth.
It's more manly.
Yeah, just a little bit. So, I mean, you've told us already what a pastor is, but if you could sort of describe, you know, what makes a pastor,
right.
like what would you say? Because I think we sort of deal with this sort of ethereally. We kind of talk about, you know, the big 30,000 foot view and what people are really, I mean, even our listeners who might be considering being pastors, we'll get into that later, but they sometimes don't know like what makes up the job. Like we see you preach on Sunday and you do the stuff with the communion and then you go back in your study and watch Facebook and YouTube the rest of the week. Golfing,
watching, what are we watching? Hotel Hell?
Something like that. Hotel Hell.
That's one on the topic. But, you know, I didn't want to, ever thought I'd want to be a pastor because my pastors, or the last couple pastors I had were nerds and I didn't think they're that smart, quite honestly. You know, so my perception was they're these nice guys that sort of preach, they run the church, they preach, you know, and I never thought, not that I say I didn't like them or look down on them, it's like, I don't want to be that, you know. So that's why I think it is a good question. First of all, you don't have to be a nerd. Of course, people right now are probably thinking you guys are all a bunch of nerds. But
well, it's just because they don't know us.
Yeah, obviously. Right. Did I say I just got back from the gym?
But we went shooting the other day.
That's right. Spent 3 hours at a skate park yesterday.
Come on. I'm cool.
I was at a wedding at I guess it was called a temple the other day.
Yeah, that doesn't make you cool, though. Yeah.
Well, I had a Yamacon.
Not cool?
No.
No. Going the other direction. We were at a skate park for 3 hours yesterday. Okay, we're getting it back. All right.
Let's go surfing.
There we go. That's cooler.
That's right. Let's trade Pokemon cards.
Not cool?
What?
tell us, while we're on this whole theme.
Yeah.
So you went to seminary. You're at your church that was your first call.
Right.
Tell us a bit about, if you will, the theology of all that, the call into the pastorate, the rite of ordination. I mean, what sets a pastor apart from, say, the people that the pastor's serving?
Right.
Those sorts of questions.
Yeah, the call of the people of God, two or three are gathered, saying this guy is going to be our shepherd. He's going to give us the word and sacraments, and to me that's the whole nine yards, and rightfully that congregation desire for that guy to be educated and know the Bible. It'd be wrong for them not to want that, but that doesn't put you in that position or give you that authority. What gives you that is that they put it upon you, confer it upon you, and then symbolically, or you know, through the rite of ordination, is sort of like, this is, and Nagel always said this is the guy. You know, the fact you're putting hands on him, nothing's going on, you're just saying, this is the guy. Well, I shouldn't say nothing's going on. I think there's, the gist of that call is a spirit thing. So you are equipped by the Spirit through the church to do that work. And quite frankly, you should trust that. God will do this through you, no matter how much you do or do not like the people you're serving, you know. And that's it. And I think we need to keep it like that.
You said that to me last night, but I think you said it, that Nagel, and since I never had a class with him, you'll have to correct me if I get this wrong, that Nagel used to say that the ordination confirms the call.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really good. I mean, I think that's very confessional, too. I mean,
absolutely.
But I think that we're sort of in this era where there's a tendency sometimes to say that the ordination confirms the call, or that the call confirms the ordination, not the other way around. In other words, you're ordained and then you're eligible for a call.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd never hear that at either seminary. Like we were just talking about reading The Primacy of the Pope. It's clearly Max Nagel, you know, on that. I think there's a tendency. I don't think anybody would actually ever say that.
I mean, at Concordia, I hear it the other way around. It's your ordination confirms your call.
It makes you eligible.
Yeah,
like you're saying a professor says this.
Well, no, we'll say that like what you said, like what Nagel said is what I hear from my professor.
Oh, okay, good. The right way.
Yeah.
No, but I do think there's a, you know, sometimes you never say it, but you talk enough in peripheral ways about it that there's this feel that that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, I would say we spend the most time talking about the call. Like if you take Christ's College
in
classes.
In class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Not about the ordination. Now, they will say the call isn't set, isn't, you know, finished, isn't completed without your ordination. But
right.
But that's what you spend time talking about, is call process, what makes up a call.
Even the pre-STEM, when you still got like 20 more years of education.
Yeah, isn't it funny?
It's that's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic. It really is, sort of. And we should get somebody on who actually knows about it, not us. But it does seem, just from my own experience and from talking to Adam and other guys that have actually gone on to seminary,
right,
and talking to Caleb, that at least in the first year, that if you did pre-SEM,
yeah,
there's a lot of duplication in that first year.
Ridiculous. Now, do you love education? Sure.
We just sent a guy, you know, that was sort of a little mentee of mine.
Right.
He's at St. Louis now, and we just had a beer with him the other night, and he was just like,
why am I doing this again?
Well, and it's in his first year, and he's like, I am doing everything that I've already done.
That's what it comes across. I got a number of guys that have gone through Concordia Ann Arbor, and is duplication. Now, I mean, should you be learning? Can you do better? Can you learn more? Of course you can. But when we're talking about all the money we're spending,
right?
I don't know why we're repeating 4 years. I'd actually have somebody go 4 years. I went, you know, like I did, quite frankly, get a wholly different degree.
And
why would you do that?
And then go on to seminary.
Yeah, and then go to seminary. Yeah. Now you got a more expansive knowledge.
I would agree with that. I'd agree with that.
That's a whole topic.
Yeah, that's a good topic, but I think there's something.
Seminary education is key. Now, I love the seminary. I love most of the professors are fantastic. It's great men hanging out, drinking, talking theology, learning, hanging out with professors, I think is fantastic. But do we need to do 8 years? You know, that's another question.
Yeah. All right, we're at time for a break.
Yep.
So we're going to do that now.
Welcome to our break. As you guys have been hearing, we have Pastor Joel Hess with us. And we mentioned at the beginning that he is an author at the Jagged Word since pretty much the beginning of the Jagged Word. And so we thought he could tell you guys why you might want to read some stuff over there and what's it about.
Yeah, what I like about the Jagged Word, gospel-centered, I have to say that, right? But really is Christ and Him crucified-centered. But rating is off a little bit, so I think our authors say a little more maybe what they want to say and not so trying to toe the party line, or the goal isn't to toe a party line, per se. Also, maybe even to beg questions that we're supposed to not ask. I think that goes on as well, and that's me. An interesting reading, different perspectives. You got pastors, you got teachers, you got a wife writing on it. So it's good writing, good reading.
How do they check it out there, Joel?
They check it out at thejaggedword.com, not jaggedword.com, I discovered, but thejaggedword.com.
We should probably buy that one, too.
You probably should buy them all, or the Ragged Word, just keep on going. or the Facebook, I think, is also a Jagged Word on the Facebook as well.
It is the Jagged Word, yep, Jagged over there.
Yeah.
That has Facebook, Twitter, website. That'll all be in the show notes so that people can get easy access to that. As always, a reminder that the show notes are in the iTunes description if you download it on iTunes, or they can be found on our website, and the ones on our website are kind of fun. They're linked via images and stuff like that, so it's a lot more interactive and easy to use than going into the iTunes show description. All right, so I think we can get back on topic here. Who has the next question? Adam asked a couple questions, so maybe the bearded fellow wants
to. The bearded one. We should go with that. Okay, so I've got a question here. Oftentimes when I bring people to our Lutheran church, and especially when our pastors, if they're doing a confession of absolution, which hopefully they are, they get up and they do the absolution.
Yeah.
The people will lean over and whisper in my ear something like, who does this guy think he is?
Right.
Which sort of, I think, rolls into the question, why is it that we say the pastor is the one that can get up and do this and just the pastor?
Right.
And why can't I get up? And I mean, like, if you're up there giving the absolution, why can't I just pop up from my pew and do the same thing?
Right. Well, I mean, simple answer to that is that people didn't ask you to do that. You're not I suppose you could, but you're not the official guy to do that. So it's all kind of good order. This is the guy to do that. It gives people certainty. Knowing that when they're hearing the gospel, they're hearing the good news, they're forgiven. It's not just Joe Blow or whatever, but this is the fellow that's the public minister. You know, if that makes sense. Just like a police officer, like anybody can do an arresting in a in America, I suppose, but ideally you have police officers that do that, keeps good order and things. And you trust when a guy in a uniform does that versus so-and-so.
Okay.
That helps at all.
Yeah, is that it? I mean, is that what makes it so that a pastor is the guy? Just that congregation has asked him to come.
Well, through
do
the
that.
Through the call, he's set aside to deliver the gifts. Is he empowered? Yeah, right.
So, how does ordination play into that? We obviously have a theology of the call in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and we have a theology of ordination. Are they the same thing? Are they different? What's the one as opposed to the other?
I mean, the ordination is the service, confesses what you mean by the call, I think, almost. So it's good for everybody to go to ordination because they're going to learn again what in the world the pastor is and what's going on here. And see, with hands laid on, that this person is the fellow. So that's what the ordination is. That's why some go on and say, well, that's a sacrament. Have you ever heard that before?
Yeah.
Ordination is a sacrament.
Well, it is a sacrament for the Roman Catholics.
Yeah, exactly. A man-made word anyways. Yeah. But there's something to that, but I think why, for some reason, we like to just annoy our people and confuse them all the time.
Yeah.
Play games with them. Anyhow.
That is interesting. Yeah. Okay. So over the past couple nights, I've heard my son Caleb over here, who is pre-sem at Concordia University Irvine, and I'd say probably is really considering his future. Ask you a couple times, why should he go to seminary? Why should he be a pastor? And then last night, he literally, as you guys were sitting around drinking beers, literally said, I give you 5 minutes, convince me to be a pastor. Boom, go. And then I stepped out because one of the keys for me is I don't want to influence his decision regarding his future endeavors and his career too much, which I think generally, to sidetrack the conversation a little bit, dads need to be pretty careful of, because I think that they're a huge influence in their kids' lives, even more so than they know, especially their first sons. So you spent that 5 minutes. I stepped out. I didn't hear what you said because I wanted him to consider it on his own. So
just like becoming a Christian,
that was brainwashing. No, just kidding. No.
It is. Yeah. Actually, you were brainwashed.
So what did you say?
We all are brainwashed.
So Caleb says, give me 5 minutes, convince me to be a pastor. You run into a young man who is considering the office of the public ministry.
Right.
And he says, convince me that I should do this. Do you even feel like it's your job to convince him? Or?
No, it's not my job. First thing I ask you, what do you like to do? You know what I mean? Because if he says stuff that's like, it's nothing to do with the pastor, I would probably say, why would you want to? No, I dissuade it, So, quite frankly, I think, Caleb, you kind of summarized it. You want to tell people the gospel.
Yep.
Yeah. Which means, sounds like you want to be a pastor. Now, can you do that anywhere? Of course you can. We need good lay people, just as much as the church needs pastors. But if that's like the primary thing you love to do and you love studying God's word in the languages, et cetera, then it sounds like to me you should be a pastor. And then comes the, did I do some selling? I think I went through and basically talked about what I do, the variety of things you do. What I love about it is you can get deep in thinking and theology and writing, reading, studying. You don't have to apologize for spending time translating, learning another language, let alone reading whatever you want to read. You know what I mean? That's part of the job. It's as important as anything else you do. At the same time, you can leave and go hang out and visit the sick and the dying or just any member just for the heck of it is good. You know what I mean? So it's the variety of being out in the library is fantastic. And quite honestly, this is perhaps sacrilegious, I suppose, but he just had a child, Caleb did, and the wonderful, for the first child at least, right, you're like, I'm going to form this child into something, some kind of Megatron thing, and it's really exciting. And then by the time you're a teen, you're like, yeah, whatever. But
good luck.
The same thing with the church, and not in an evil way, like I'm going to form them to be like me, but you get to be, with all your complaints about being at different churches you've been at, and how they do things, well, now you get to do this by God's grace and humbly desiring his will for that congregation, but be the church that you would want to go to, And that sounds totally manly, and not manly, humanely, you know, and so in a bad sense. But I think that's okay. You know what I mean? We all just should desire to have the best church, to be the best church we can. And I think that's something that probably attracts him. Anyhow, so that's basically what I said. Also, you know, the final thing is, what turned me is from being totally academic in pursuit of truth, and I love art as well, so pursuing truth in art is like my thing. Being a pastor confronts you with life and death, blood and guts, so that when you speak incredible things, or you study, or you want to say something great about truth, it's never going to be far away from people dying and rising in life situations. Mm. You know, so I think it makes you a better truth discoverer, if you will, and purveyor and communicator. But that's me, though. I mean, I love philosophy, et cetera. You're truly a philosopher only as a pastor.
Well, that's...
Or as many philosophers were always in the military. You know, like Nietzsche, I think there's something to that. Like, these guys, and of course, they had to serve back then, but it kind of really, you know, their head was in the game.
Interesting.
So, did it work? Did he convince you?
You know, I'm not 100%. It's always good to get there. I'm like a last-minute decision type of guy.
Or just let the spirit lead
and
you.
And I changed my mind 5 times is the other thing that always happens.
Yeah, that's another problem I have. But
we'll see. It's definitely a possibility. My application will be going in to St. Louis at least.
Just go from there.
Yeah. But I'm also applying at another graduate school.
Right.
I got a question, practical question, I guess. As a pastor, what is it you like to see of or from your parishioners? I mean, you know, do you want them to not just read theology, but to read blogs and stay attuned to politics within the church? Do you want them to come to every single Bible study you're offering? You know, these sorts of things.
Yeah. I would say you're gathering with the saints, hearing his word whenever it's offered. So like we do a Wednesday and Sundays, I'd say ideally even Wednesday and Sunday, but you don't get on people if they're not there all the time, but your regularity and loving your neighbor and whatever your vocation is, you know, I think it's very simple like that. Does that mean you want to be on the church board or something? That's one way that you see a talent of loving your neighbor as yourself. Great. I could care less, you know? So I think you got to keep it that simple and that general as well. And sometimes I publish Jagged Word blogs for the church to see, and sometimes I don't do that, but of my own. but I don't care if they're into all that stuff. In fact, maybe sometimes, maybe not so much like 1517 is always theological and not controversial, you know? That's good, but sometimes you almost don't want your people sort of in controversial church issues and just going to bed stressed about something.
That makes sense. But they don't need to be stressed about.
Yeah.
What about the pastor's role in, I guess, shaping the parishioner's worldview? Maybe you could put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
With all the stuff going on with gay marriage and all these things that affect the big left-hand kingdom, civilizational type of issues. How do you approach those things as a pastor?
Yeah.
From the pulpit and Bible class and conversation, or do you?
Well,
do you just leave it alone?
This allows me to do a little kickoff here, July 30th at Emmanuel Cadillac. If you're in the area, we've got a thing called the Truth Seminar. And so we've got a chemist, PhD in chemistry, coming in talking about one issue. Then we're going to be talking about how you know stuff. So I'll begin it with how do you know things? How do you know things to be true?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of throwing my hand there that I actually do think that the church, because our schools have rejected the responsibility of these things, the church as a service to the neighbor, not simply preaching the gospel, that's number one, but as a service to our community, our neighbor, bringing back logic and the study of logic and reason and how you know things. Because I really do believe 50 years from now, the church will be the only organization left in America, and we will be in charge of all those institutions. But that's not the primary job of the church at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a believer, the Bible will give you a worldview. And people do need to see that worldview actually can affect everything. Not in the sense of throw out all your Metallica albums, you know, but more in, you know, there is a way to see the world that knowing the gospel definitely affects.
Mm-hmm.
and not here's church on Sunday, my spiritual life, and then here's, you know, my worldly life. No, it is all totally tied in. Hmm. So, yeah, I think we have a great responsibility more than ever.
Yeah. I sometimes think, you know, back in the early Middle Ages, right after the fall of the Roman Empire,
right,
for a right. good couple centuries, Europe was in chaos. You've like got wild tribes.
Dark ages, you would call it?
Well,
you're to invent a term. Was that what you?
No. Dark ages. Yeah, yeah. I don't like that term.
Right.
But, but if you could go back with Bill and Ted in their time machine and right. kind of cruise around Europe in let's say 500, 600,
which we're doing right AD, now.
If there were any sort of islands of stability or yeah. civilization, yeah. it would be in the monasteries.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have church. I mean, they had churches, of course, down the Mediterranean Rim. But
right.
The places that people thought right. and read the classics, if they had access yeah. to them, which was pretty rare, but
yeah.
where education was taking place, where you know, places that acted as hospitals that yeah. taught people how to grow things yeah. and stuff. These were monasteries.
We would be doing this.
And it's like the church, you know, a lot of people talk about we're in this post-Christian or post-Christendom America.
Right.
And there's something to that, right. to be sure. And it's almost like we're going back to the days yes. Where the church is persecuted, and but eventually the church will
be here.
It'll be here.
Before Christ
and,
comes again.
Yeah. Well, but eventually the church is going to be sort of the civilizational force,
yes.
the civilizing force.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm actually preparing, kind of like a doomsday preparer. But seriously, though, in a good sense, we should be these preppers, yeah. but not sort of storing. Well, we do have arms. That's another topic. But I'm in Redneck, Michigan, so. Nothing's going to happen up there if you just stop by somebody's house.
Well, you got the Michigan militia there, right?
Michigan militia started there. I've got an interesting story about that anyhow, my previous life. But, no, I really do think that we are preparing our people to do that. So, like, number one, preaching the gospel, teaching the scripture, et cetera. But there's nothing wrong with teaching logic, reason, and real science. So, the whole same-sex stuff and things like that, I take a lot of time in explaining this not simply in biblical mm-hmm. right and wrong, but this is actually not, doesn't make sense logically, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the history of the world. And I think we have a responsibility, just like we have a responsibility to have schools and to do a food bank, I have a responsibility of a knowledge bank, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that does bring people into the church. I think people desire to know truth more than ever, actually. It attracts people. But I do think, you know, I've been into... Augustine, which is typical of a Lutheran, I guess, but he was not just word and sacrament. The dude was a dictator and used force, et cetera, to take care of heresies and let alone, and he was just forced to, you know, in other words, to keep order in his society and move the church forward. He had actually a responsibility to do that. I don't think it was wrong. Some might say it still is wrong today, but I don't think it is. So that's pretty bold.
That was good. Good question, yeah. Adam. Yeah. Last one I got for you, and then I think we probably need to wrap up here, is, and Caleb asked this before the break, I should just throw it his way, but he wanted to know how much your, as a pastor, how much your congregation impacts sort of your day-to-day life.
I thought he was going to say, how much do they pay you? But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I think he knows the answer to yeah. that, probably. But, I mean, it's even popped up last night for you. You're here on vacation,
right.
we've been hanging out in California, and then something came up last night that you had to
right.
deal with, you know. Not a big deal, really,
right.
but just, most of us, when we go on vacation, not me, I've never really had a job where you go on vacation, work doesn't reach out to you.
Right.
But most people listening probably have jobs that when they go on vacation,
it ends, right?
It ends until they come back, and then there's this pile of work on their desk, and
right.
they get back to it. Of course, that's not unique to the pastor.
No.
That's what I was trying to
get
across. But it is, I don't know, it is part and parcel, I think, with being a pastor, and
yeah.
people should know that.
Yeah, it is what it is, and I can't stand pastors that are so obsessed with boundaries, you know, and treating it as a job. I don't like that word anyway. It's like, this is life, and this job is life and death. Is it all depend on you? Of course not. You shouldn't be like that either, thinking I need to always be in contact and no one else can do what I do when I'm gone. You shouldn't get that attitude. But the fact is, being a pastor is 24/7. You take the time with your family as you should. And you should say, I'm doing it now. I'm not going to answer my phone. But you know what? Sometimes someone died. You have to go, you know. But this isn't unique to the pastor either. And we were kind of talking about a while ago, or earlier this week, I should say, the whiny pastors that kind of think their job is so hard, you know, and they work so many hours and they're always on call, like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, that's any, the restaurant owner is like that. You know, it's just how it is. If you don't want to, if you don't want to be in that sort of, have that sort of call upon you, then you shouldn't be a leader in general.
Yeah, get a different job.
Yeah.
Now, is there a flip side of that? I mean,
but it does invade your life as a person, but you should desire that, you know, and you, of course, you're going to be naturally annoyed by it once in a while, but this is how it is.
Yeah, I think I've also seen, I don't know, and maybe I'm wrong from what you're getting here, but pastors where there is not a single boundary in the sense that family comes last.
That's absolutely, I've seen, I've seen disasters.
Children get right. completely pushed to the wayside, or they're only mom's responsibility.
That's right. No, I think, so therefore, Caleb, you need to have set boundaries. But I hate that word, but you know, you have your duty as a husband, you have your duty as a father, and then
I mean,
you
sometimes there's not an emergency, right? And you're still sitting in your office.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you can easily, it's not that hard to take care of that. But I just, you know, it's like we just made the pastoral job into a middle class profession, and not the sort of life and death thing. And the early church, I just can't see them, you know, Paul taking a vacation or something. You know, he's got work to do, man. There was no vacation. Of course,
he holiday.
I mean, he did either. A lot of traveling.
Yeah, I traveled, so, yeah. Yeah.
Busy
sightseeing.
Busy getting shipwrecked and persecuted and thrown into jail.
Yeah.
And jail was like forced vacation on Paul. It's dude,
slow down.
Take a break.
But then back to Augustine, he aspired and so much wanted just to get a bunch of guys together and forget everything. In fact, his whole life was actually trying to do that, and they kept on pulling him back in, you know, to just hang out and read and write and talk was like his goal. And that's the Greco-Roman goal. But I'm not saying that's everything he did is correct, but that sounds good, actually.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for us today. Oh, wait. I have one more. We always do this when we get guests on, so I'm just going to throw it out at you. Don't give you any time to prep.
Right.
If somebody wanted to read something on this, where would you send them?
Reading on the pastoral office? Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I can't remember. Actually, I've got a biography in Augustine right now. It's like the third one. I really like it. I don't know the author, though.
Is it the latest one? That Peter Brown?
I believe it is one of the later ones.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say with that, like anything, instead of reading a theology of it, reading a biography of a pastor, whether it's ancient or new, anything. In fact, all your leadership skills, everything should be just biographies of great people you like. Mm. So,
what about Bill Garrett's Hammer of God?
I think I think he's almost a process theologian, but it's fun reading. But I think he's a dangerous sort of sense of like, you give them the law, and then you give them the gospel, and then this is how it works. And it's not a bad read, but it's kind of full of cliches. But
literally,
whoa, I've never
murdered.
I've never
that's
heard
the
that.
First time I've ever heard somebody say something bad about Hammer of God.
Yes, yeah. Write me down. I also don't like Swedes, but I'm joking. I'm Swedish.
He's probably
Swedish.
Not. Swedish by way of Germany.
No, it's half Swedish.
Yeah, wow. Okay, anything else from anyone else?
No, I think that's it. If you would like to catch up on the most recent shows, you can go to www.thinkingfellows.com. There you'll find the backlog of episodes. You'll find a link to our Facebook and Twitter page, as well as various ways you can sign up to receive the show each week. Also, there will be the show notes for your favorite episodes. So don't forget to go check it out. See you next time.